What's going on, everybody?
Hello.
Yeah, we back. I almost forgot what I was about to say. I paused mid-sentence.
That happens to me a lot of the time.
Yeah. Got a trivia for you. Got a trivia question.
Okay.
A trivia question. Okay. How many of you all know? I mean, well, let me restart that. How many of you all know?
10. Like, yeah. 10 of us.
15. At one point, Chicago had more than 77 community areas. How many did it have? I'll tell you after we come back after the intro. But first, if you could, please like, subscribe, follow. Join us on all social media platforms at 77 Flavor Shy. Also, follow us on 77flavorshy.com, brand new website.
Hey, you can message us there.
You can. And we respond this time.
Sometimes. We will respond.
Yeah.
Also, if you wanna talk shit, just do Dario at 77flavorsofshy.com.
No, it make that change to Sarah. Anyway, let's get ready. 77 Flavors of Chicago.
It's Sarah.
And it's Dario.
And we traveled through all of Chicago's 77 community areas. We shared some great stories and took you to our favorite restaurants.
But you know what? There's more Chicago history and food to discover.
So join us as we connect you to the greatest city in the world.
You know why? Because this is 77 Flavors of Chicago. Yo!
Yo!
Our dog is losing it.
We're having a case of the puppies today.
He's having a crisis right now.
He is having a crisis. I think he lost his toy.
Yeah.
It's right behind you.
Yeah. Welcome back to another episode. How y'all feeling? Thank Good. You for that answer.
Oh, I'm answering you on answer your behalf.
For the people.
Great.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. What did we do this week?
Oh, we had a lot going on this week. Shit. Yeah. It almost is crazy to think that it is. What day is it? Well, it's Sunday. It's Sunday for us right now. But
yeah,
I mean, we almost done with this month.
We are.
Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, that's out of control. Yeah. I was thinking about that the other day. I was like, man, January always like zoom by. January, February, March. Next thing you know, your ass is in May.
I know. That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, crazy.
Honestly, February is nothing.
Damn. I mean,
no,
like I know. I know.
No, it's an important month.
Shit, yeah, that might be the consensus across the world.
Wow.
No, but
in terms of length of time.
Yeah, yes, it's
short.
Why is that month 28 days? Something to do with the sun and the moon and shit, right?
Yeah, some white person was like 28.
I mean, it's like it don't make no sense. I don't know.
Here's the thing. A lot of calendars are based on the movement of the moon. So like the Muslim calendar does not match
right,
the Christian regular. Calendar.
Right.
Not regular Christian.
Okay. I mean I was thinking I didn't mean it like that.
I don't know why I got defensive.
Yeah, for real. Shit.
I'm not even Muslim. I was like, not regular.
Yeah, right.
Because
I'm about to say the basic calendar you get in the mall. That's the one. That's what I was thinking.
Right, right.
Which is
based on Jesus.
Oh, okay.
But other calendars work based on the moon, the movement of the moon. So like for the Muslim calendar, you literally watch the moon, and when it becomes full. That's the beginning of the new month.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. I mean,
so Ramadan, like when we decide every year, Ramadan is different because the calendar moves. It's every year. It's like almost 10 days earlier than the year before.
God damn. And what?
So it all depends on the movement of the moon. And I'm sorry, not full moon. It's a crescent moon. So you have countries like Muslim countries all over the world will monitor the moon. And if they observe a crescent moon, that means the next day is Ramadan.
Oh, that's yeah. So you say it's 10 days. I'd be like, what day is it?
It moves 10 days every year. Well, it moves 10 Christian calendar days every year.
Wow. So how y'all stay on the same day?
We don't. What do you mean?
I mean, like, I mean, like, like the if the calendars are different, I'm so confused.
Well, because
this is a good lesson.
The start of the year is not the start of the year isn't January.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, right. That I do know.
Yeah. So like you have like the lunar. So that's why it's not year is not January 1st.
Right.
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 It's January 22nd.
22nd. 24. We're already running.
Right. So every like the calendar doesn't start on January 1st.
Which by the way. Happy Lunar New Year. Yeah. Yeah. The rabbit year. This is the rabbit year?
It's the rabbit year.
Okay, what that mean?
It's going to be a good year.
Yeah, we're about to be all over this place.
If these calendars are any indication to you, is that time is man-made.
Yeah,
and
right.
it's arbitrary.
Right.
So if you feel like the start of the year didn't work for you, maybe the Lunar New Year could be the year where you, the time where you restart things and do what you want to be doing. Get or you could just do it any day.
Yeah, right.
Any
right.
day. You could wake up and be like, today's the day. It could be a Wednesday in March.
This is very enlightening. Yeah. I'll be honest. Damn, I gotta stop saying that.
Yeah.
Cause I'm not lying, y'all.
You're lying the rest of the time. Yeah,
everything else I say was a lie. Damn, that's.
You
I don't
do
know
say
why.
That a lot.
Why do I say that a lot?
I don't know.
You know what
did,
I mean?
Did
you
people
know?
Question your
never just
question
just,
you as a child?
No. Yes, mama and daddy.
That's probably why.
Everything
let's,
I did.
Let's unpack that.
Yeah. Right no, now. Let's not do this on the podcast. I'm going to start tearing up. Snot bubbles and shit coming up.
Snot bubbles.
Are you going to hear? My mama.
No. If you're listening to this at 7 in the morning, Dario's about to trauma dump on you.
Yeah, for real. So. I'm about to mess up your whole Monday right now. Oh, man.
If you learn two things, Dario does not lie.
Yeah.
And you can restart your life at any point.
You can.
Because time is man-made.
Yeah.
And it's meaningless.
Right, right. So it's time of the essence. Ooh, that's a good one.
In terms of like we end up dying, yes.
What's going on with this podcast? This is a way
I'm
different
just
podcast.
Saying, it's, no. It's not like sad.
No, it's not. It's just very...
It's what gives life meaning. If life didn't end... Mm-hmm. It would have no meaning. It would just—you could just do whatever you want, whenever you want.
Well, don't do that, boy. Be lawless out here. Yeah. You know what? I got a PlayStation.
Oh yeah.
You know what? Sorry, y'all that listen and watch that.
That are so. Dario made a post on our Instagram.
I got y'all last.
Dario was gifted a PS5.
Early anniversary.
Thank you.
I love you.
Present. I love you too. And so he made a little post on our Instagram. Saying that he will no longer be on the podcast and that I will be taking over full time. One, people were in an uproar.
Yeah.
And I am extremely offended. And here's the thing, not just like commenting on the post, but people will message us separately. Like, is this real? First of all, relax. You see you watch the full video. He pulls up a PS5 box at the end, talking about, I gotta go throw this away. But also, a little unhinged if it was just me talking to myself.
Yeah. No, people do it all the time.
Yeah, they're unhinged. You want to listen to a single person podcast? The whole point is like...
I don't know, man. You can explore your greatness.
The back
and forth. Hey, that's an inside joke.
It's a joke.
It is a joke. Anyway, continue.
But the point is, what's entertaining about a single person podcast?
Really, not much.
I've never listened to one where it's just one person.
You know, I didn't start listening.
Except for Jay Shetty.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, he releases one person. He releases his own, a single person episode. But they're no longer than, 15 to 20 minutes. It's just him, talking about a topic for 15 or 20 minutes. But
Jay Shetty sounds so intellectual on their podcast. He's,
smart as hell.
Do we sound like that? Not like intellectual. Because I know I'd be sounding goofy. I say I be. Anyway, no, but
it's
goofy. No, it's not. I'm just saying, the audio, our audio is good too. But maybe it's listening to somebody else's podcast.
He has a full professional studio.
So do we.
I know, but it's just
sitting on one table.
It's mobile.
It's just mobile. But what I'm saying is the audio sounds so good, and ours sounds good also. Yeah, great.
But we do things like that's how we talk.
We be having shit like this.
Yeah. His is more like. My name is Jay Shetty. Thank you so much for listening.
The accent.
Yeah.
He got the accent. Going crazy on it. It's accents sound better when it's focused on the microphone.
That's actually colonial conditioning. Don't let don't let colonialism convince you that the British accent is great.
No, Dale.
Stop fetishizing the British accent. They're colonizers.
I'm just saying.
If you're British and listen to this podcast, thank you so much for your support.
Shout out to Great Britain. We're gonna be on the charts next week. What? We're gonna be the great. Every time we say something about a different country, we end up on their charts.
Damn.
We was on Germany's charts all just because we did the Chris Kendall market. We was on their charts for at least 2 weeks, almost three weeks.
Crazy.
Yeah, we was Japan when we did Avondale.
Oh yeah.
We was on there for a week and a half.
Why were we on the Russian one?
To start the year, I mean, to start the podcast, when we started the podcast, y'all, we were on the Russian charts, like, not just on there, we charted. We were, like, top 50, like, at one point, and we were on there for, like, 3-4 months. Like, no joke, when we fell out of the charts in Russia, I was like, this is perfect timing.
I have my uncle's wife, her family lives in Russia, but that's the only... I don't think they listen to the podcast.
They was holding us down for the first few months. Shit, we was on the charts heavy. You ready to?
How's your PlayStation? Oh, experience?
Y'all, look, your boy's back in the groove. It came. I got the Ragnarok Game of War, God of War, game, and then you know I did the subscription to PS, PlayStation Networks, PlayStation Network. Whatever. Where you get games like they give it to. I got that, and I got literally all the games I wanted. Yeah. You know, that's out. So, like, I used to be a huge PlayStation fan. I've had every one, so I'm still a fan, you know, but these shits cost $600 a piece, so you got to make a decision.
God damn, don't remind me.
Yeah. But I only wanted the PlayStation 5 for a few games.
Yeah.
Spider-Man, Gran Turismo, God of War, Last of Us, Tomb Raider, but Tomb Raider is on Xbox now too also, but just a few like PlayStation exclusive games.
Yeah.
And I'm back in the groove. I got all of them. Last of Us, I'm at the point in Last of Us because of, you know, I want the HBO series. I want to get into it. I never finished the game, but I'm back at the part where I left off at and I keep dying. And I remember now why I stopped playing. What?
Because you keep dying?
Yeah. And your brother was broke.
Your ego can't handle.
No. Your brother needed to pay rent. So I was like, hey, y'all can take this as PlayStation. This was back in the day. I was down bad.
You were, yeah.
I was down bad. I was in a bad position.
Damn.
When this is, I had to sacrifice some things.
The way I varied.
Last of Us was the last game. That was going to be the last of me. That's. Had to get that shit up.
That's dumb. You know how I justify like big purchases?
Mm-hmm.
Is how many uses do you get out of it? So what is the cost per use? If the cost, like I got a bonus at work last year, and so I bought the Dyson Airwrap
as a gift to myself.
And I was like, I have to use it enough that the cost per use is so low that it justifies the fact that I'm buying a fucking $600 blow dryer.
Yeah, I mean, you use it.
And I use it literally. It's my only tool. But
hair be looking voluminous.
You know what I'm saying? Okay, let's talk about it.
Okay.
But, like, I'm looking at your Nintendo Switch. You don't use that shit for nothing. Don't do it.
But that was a trade-in.
Your cost per use for that is $300 a use.
But I traded my old Xbox in. You know, when we got the new Xbox.
Yeah, but
I had the old one, remember? And I traded that one. That was just sitting there.
Your niece and nephew are the only people that use that Switch.
Well, that's per use. But that was a $0 cost, though. That was a trade. That was a swap. Mm-hmm. So we ain't losing nothing on that. Anyway, y'all ain't got to hear about our financial situation.
It's not a financial situation.
It's not. No, I know. But we talk about video games. This is a video game podcast.
Capitalism.
Now. 77 characters of Chicago.
Damn.
Let's get ready for the podcast. Still have not changed the goddamn this the more you know. But anyway,
let's make a new jingle now right now. What would you
Ghostbuster?
Ghostbusters.
Yeah, let's get it. Yeah, this do sound outdated because we so fresh now. I mean, but we'll figure something out. Y'all, if you haven't read by the title yet, we are talking about...
You didn't give us the answer to the trivia, did you?
Oh, shit. Fuck.
Why was your laugh like a little spray bottle?
Yeah. The answer. The question is, Chicago had more than 77 community areas at one point. How many did it have? The answer, 80. The answer is 80. And you're really not a real answer. But the process was when they first came up with the community areas.
Yeah.
The proposition, the guy that came up with it, he proposed 80 because there at first there were neighborhoods. He was going by neighborhoods and there were like over 400 neighborhoods. And that was too many, right, to kind of narrow it down. So he said, let's do it by the land areas. You'll hear about it in a second. And geographical, like, structure, rivers, trains, that kind of stuff. And so 80 was the number he came up with, 80 community areas. But then that was quickly narrowed down to 77. And that's not a narrow down. That's three less. And I think they just kind of took some of those, like, that don't need to be. But as you all know, there was originally when that was, it actually went down to 75, 75 community areas.
Yeah, and then Edgewater. And then
Edgewater split from Uptown.
And O'Hare.
And right. O'Hare were added. So
look at me remembering things.
Okay.
Like I've been here for a year and a half.
O'Hare, 76, and Edgewater, 77. So that's the answer. Sorry that it took y'all, took me
20 like minutes.
12 minutes to get there. but we are talking about the University of Chicago, talking to the University of Chicago.
Yeah, we're actually talking about the founding of the 77 or like how they came to be.
Yes.
We spent a year and a half visiting them and talking about them. And we were curious as to why.
Why? You know, I feel like this was the next step. We as soon as we realized, you know, we were coming to the end, we were like, we got to talk to the University of Chicago.
Who else would we talk to?
Yeah, right.
So if you're not aware, the person that decided to
create the
77 was at the University of Chicago. That's why. Yes.
Yeah, it was them. They kind of did this for the whole city. Yeah. So,
and we met with two people from the Chicago Studies Office.
Mm-hmm.
It's not technically a department. They'll talk about it in a second. Yeah. But it is an office that kind of, I guess I don't have to explain.
Yeah, they'll listen to it. But here is the interview we had with University of Chicago.
Enjoy.
I'm Tess. I'm the assistant director for Chicago Studies, and I'm also a lifelong Chicagoan. That helps with the job.
Yeah. That's why we hired her.
Yeah. The line that got you. Oh, she's in.
And I'm Chris Scrable. I'm the assistant dean of the college and the executive director of Chicago Studies and experiential learning.
Okay.
Cool. What is the Chicago Studies department?
Yeah.
So we actually aren't a department. We're this kind of weird unit that sits in the office of the dean of the undergraduate college. So all 7,600 undergrads at the University of Chicago, we're part of what's called the Office of Research and Teaching Innovations. And that office is broadly about, you know, sort of promoting creative ways to study and learn while you're here at the university. Our focus is on kind of helping all the different disciplines to think about the ways that the questions and the theories that they have kind of map onto and can be enriched by engaging with the city.
Oh, wow. So that's a very important, really cool. Yeah, that's like huge.
It's a really cool gig, I gotta say, you know?
Kind of like behind the scenes, you like the...
So very much so.
How can whatever you're studying affect the city or be affected by the city?
Bingo. And I think actually, if you think about like the history of the University of Chicago, that duality has been really important at various points. You know, it's been harder for the academy to remember one or the other of those two poles. But what we're trying to do right now is make sure that that dialogue is open and free flowing and rich and frankly, easy. Because if you think about like a typical student schedule, it's a lot easier to do most of your research online. If you're a faculty member, it's a lot easier to stay at the level of books and theories, but to really actively engage the city and to really listen to the city and let it teach you and criticize you and raise hard questions about the field that you're teaching, that's a lot more work. So a lot of what we do is about making it easier. Tess maybe a little bit more on the student-facing side with sort of co-curricular stuff that we do that engages students in just thinking about the city. And then my work tends to be a little bit more with faculty and departments thinking about the way that classes and disciplines more broadly can engage and be informed by the city.
That's a very good like pairing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like honestly, that's like, cause you got the student side of it and you got the faculty. How do we come together? Cause that's always been my struggle.
Yeah.
I never trusted the teachers. So if I had somebody to speak for me.
The dirty little secret there really is that like, frequently as not, it is the students and the students' interest and their questions that kind of leads where the classes go. So we're offering a class we've never offered before this quarter. It's about researching historic Chicago. And in parallel to it, we're doing a research project that we're leading that's looking in very great detail at the history of 55th Street, so right near the campus. Yeah. And to our surprise, like, students voted with their feet and they filled the class and they also filled the research project. And I was like, well, that's because everybody in the research project is taking the class. There's one student in common between those two groups, which means that the students are really interested in it. And that's data that I can take back to different departments and be like, hey,
there's an interest. There's an interest.
Do this more often. But we also have a lot of faculty who choose to teach classes because they themselves are really engaged Chicagoans. They just have an interest, or they're working with a nonprofit, or, you know, they've got a connection in the city. And sometimes what we're doing there is like giving them permission to geek out about the city they love, even though their published research is focused in Cambodia or, you know, some other part of the world. This is a global institution. People think about lots of big stuff. But
I used to this school is like, I'm from Jordan, and I grew up in Jordan, right? Oh, wow. And then I moved here for college, and I went to ISU. But I used to lie to my friends when I was younger and tell them my dad went to the University of Chicago. That's how much the school has had an impact on my life. He went to Southern Illinois, not the University of Chicago. But I used to tell people, I was like, yeah, my dad, he went to the University of Chicago for engineering. He didn't.
We have engineering, molecular engineering, right, or something.
No, he's a civil engineer. Yeah. Nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
No, for sure.
Yeah. So you were talking about like the importance of, you know, what University of Chicago is doing and like the connection to the people and vice versa, right? Which kind of brings you to the start of University of Chicago, which is, it's kind of like been like that from the start. In 1909, we know that's when the university started. John D. Rockefeller gave $600,000 for this building to kind of be started. But this wasn't the first one. This wasn't the first one. Can you tell us anything about that? I just found that out a little while ago.
It's actually a really interesting story. So the old University of Chicago was founded by Stephen Douglas, the little giant, right? Abraham Lincoln's rival and ardent segregationist and defender of the slave trade.
Yeah.
And so Douglas founded it. Douglas had this kind of like very early urban planning vision, right? He bought a plot of land that's over at like the end of 39th, right near where they built that new bike path that goes over the lakefront trail. So he owned a plot of land over there, and he like set it up with some like cool townhouses on one side, and he had his own little plot of land. But in order to make that like a destination, it needed a couple of other things. First, it needed a commuter line to connect it to the city. So he used his influence with the Illinois legislature to get the Illinois Central Railroad, which is now electric, right, to run along the lakeshore, conveniently right next to the land that he already owned. Yeah. So we got a rail connection. That made it easy for commuters. And then it was just a matter of setting a stop there. No problem. So the second thing that he needed was he needed to give the place some, like, cachet, right? So part of that was setting up some parkland around there. Mm-hmm. But the other part was to put an institution of higher learning there, because like, obviously you live in a serious place if you have a university, and if your university was the University of Chicago, so much more official, right? Obviously that was a center that people wanted to be close to. So Douglas was doing this in like the 1850s, and the university kind of got started. It was affiliated with the Baptist Church. And then pretty quickly, Douglas died not so long thereafter, and the financial backing just wasn't super solid. And so
foreclosed, right?
Yeah, so fundamentally it was foreclosed on. You know, the Great Fire was probably what killed it in some ways. Not that the fire made it down to 39th Street, it didn't, but just all the money in the city of Chicago that could have gone to things like universities or parks or all of that got diverted to rebuilding the city and to downtown. And so that university closed. And then, you know, it was about 10 years later, I think it was, that the idea came about to create a new University of Chicago. What's funny is it, in many ways, it's the same urban planning blueprint. Like around the time that Douglas was getting the first University of Chicago started, you had Paul Cornell, cousin of Ezra, who founded Cornell University. Paul Cornell had founded Hyde Park, the village of Hyde Park, which is where we're sitting today. And again, inspired by his good friend, Stephen Douglas, he was like, what I need is a rail stop.
53rd, yeah.
7th, right? I need a rail stop. I need a park. Washington Park, Jackson Park, the Midway, all of that was designed to enhance the gravitas of the neighborhood. Yeah. And I need a major academic institution.
Just play SimCity.
He just took it. It's exactly it. He just took the plot and it was like, and then he started working to make it happen here. He brought in a pretty well-known up-and-coming educator, William Rainey Harper, to be the first president. Rainey Harper had some new ideas about education and the ways in which it should intersect with its surrounding communities. And so they founded a university here, which was originally just one building, Cobb Hall, that's next to us. And then they founded an extension for downtown, and that's now the Graham School of Continuing and Professional Studies. But kind of from the very beginning, the university had this idea that it was going to be an intellectual center. And the other thing that was kind of novel was that they were open to educating everyone. Women could enroll here, African Americans could enroll here. There were no limits on who could be a student here, which was pretty unusual in the time.
Yeah, that's a very interesting, because we talk over these 77 community areas that we discussed, we talk so much about the University of Chicago's role in kind of defining what, you know, kind of people see Chicago is. You know what I mean? Like it's a big piece. And so when we thought about talking about this subject, we like, we have to come to University of Chicago. Is there any like remnants of the old university around?
Because Douglas's personal wealth was so tied into the slave trade, the university has really, we have the name in common. I think at one point there were probably some volumes from the library of the first university that made their way here. For a period of time, there was a stone from one of the buildings at the old university that was embedded in a wall over on the other side of campus as sort of a connection. And actually, that was removed a couple of years ago. Because the university, you know, really, and I think, you know, in the spirit of full disclosure, there's a group of graduate students and historians who have sort of argued that there is at least an implicit identity between the two institutions, and that imposes an obligation of reparations on the university. Mm-hmm. The university's kind of preeminent historian, who's also the dean of the college, John Boyer, he argues in his book that's not the case, but I think it's still an open question. And, you know, there are certainly plenty of things that the University of Chicago, in its role shaping the city, does need to answer for. We'll probably talk about some of those as we get into the community areas.
I really like the fact that the university kind of took that stance. You know what I mean? Because, like, you can, you know, perception is reality. You know, I used to hate that in retail. You know what I mean? When people are like, well, if you look mad, then you are a man. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, no, I'm not. You know what I mean? As I'm mad. But like, you know, when you think about this, you don't really think that there are two distinctions between old and new. You know what I mean? We know who Stephen Douglas was. We talked about him on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So to have that kind of, you know, University of Chicago say, hey, let's kind of separate ourselves from that. We don't want that old hanging over us. I like that a lot.
I mean,
who would like, right? Who would, right? As a black guy, all right. I'm on board with this. let's talk about it. The 77 that started here with Chicago, University of Chicago. Like, what? How? How?
Or my first question is why?
Yeah, right. Why?
Like, why did they create the 77 community area?
Well, it was actually kind of a very there's a theoretical reason and there's a real practical reason. So practically speaking, and I think this is actually the reason that they've endured. The community areas were just kind of a nice way to aggregate statistical data about the city. And if you think about it, there's lots of other ways that we could do that. Wards, or sometimes folks will use things like zip codes or census blocks, but the boundaries of those things all change. Zip codes is terrifying. Yeah. You don't realize it, but zip codes actually move.
Yeah.
And wards, I mean, we all know the ward boundaries change all the time,
that's
right?
A different conversation.
And they're weird. So, like, you definitely don't want to use wards. So one of the real practical reasons was just as a way of dividing up a growing metropolitan area and kind of, you know, standardizing the ways and through a collaborative agreement with the census, you know, census data always conforms to those community area boundaries, which has made them kind of enduringly useful, even though the theoretical foundation for them has shifted a little bit. Yeah. So that's the second part of it, right? The theory behind it. So urban sociology, the idea of like studying cities as a phenomenon in themselves and studying the ways that human beings build and destroy communities in the context of cities, that starts here at the University of Chicago. And it really starts with two figures, a guy named Robert Park, who got here in around 1914, I believe, and a guy named Ernest Burgess, who was a student of Park's and then became a professor here in 1916. These two guys, with an increasingly large group of former students and collaborators, kind of were among the first to take sociology, which had been this kind of philosophical, theoretical armchair discipline, and begin informing it with experience in the real world. And, you know, the real world that they were conveniently exposed to was Chicago. It was right here. It was also super interesting to a lot of people around the world because it was this new city, right? It had burned to the ground not so long before. Right, exactly. And it had kind of come back up out of nothing. So there was this idea that, like, you could study a city almost from its beginning if you were looking at Chicago, but it was also convenient, right? So they started thinking about the ways that cities form and grow and develop. And they had this theory that human beings in cities would function a lot like other organisms, other animals and plants and so on in kind of a Darwinian ecosystem. So they kind of thought that, well, just the way that different species are kind of struggling with one another in nature, so too human beings are like competing for scarce resources in an urban space. And if you let that play out over time, they felt like it was going to sort of naturally lead to the formation of these kind of natural areas that would evolve based on geographical features and transit lines and sort of where jobs were, and that was going to lead to the formation of sort of groupings. So the community areas is what happened when Burgess, who was kind of the maps guy, Burgess took all of these factors that they thought were important, and he put them all on a kind of a multi-layered map. Yeah. And he and his students in like 1923, 1924, they created what they called the Social Science Research Base Map of Chicago. And in that, they recognized what they felt were 75 natural areas that they sort of assumed that over time, you know, human beings in the conditions of Chicago were going to kind of naturally form these 75 distinct subcommunities. They were overall in history mostly wrong, It was still really convenient for aggregating statistical data. And so we keep using them. And then we start calling them neighborhoods, which they never were and never have been. You guys know the neighborhoods is a much more complex much more on the ground phenomenon.
It's crazy to think that that's how they thought about people at that time.
Chicago grew so fast in the latter half of the 19th century. It was really like 11-fold increase between, I think, 1850 and the fire. Yeah. And then after the fire, there was this massive building boom because, again, clean slate. That's a great story. If you haven't talked to Carl Smith yet about what happened in Chicago after the fire, that's a great conversation.
We got it on camera now.
Not only did the whole downtown burn down, but all the paperwork burned, which meant that there was this massive land grab. Right.
So nobody had jurisdiction over anything.
Well, the only people who could get their land back was people who could document a claim. And guess what you needed to document a claim? Education, wealth, status, powerful friends who could vouch for you. So whole communities were erased. Like the Gold Coast kind of exists on land. We don't know who was there before.
Wow.
We think it was a group of like immigrants who were kind of eking out their existence as fishermen. But we don't know because Potter Palmer bought it right after the fire. There was nobody to contest his claim. He was Potter Palmer, so everybody was going to be like, yeah, totally.
Didn't he put in Lakeshore Drive as well?
He put in that conveniently. The city council decided right around the time he acquired that land, the city council came up with the idea of creating a pleasure promenade that would go right next to Potter Palmer's new land.
Oh, wow. Convenient. Make it
crazy the way these things seem to keep happening.
These people are like the OG Nepo babies.
It's totally true.
That's amazing. The only I feel like if George Streeter was around to hear this, he would hate it.
Right?
To claim his own state. and he was just a few years late.
I know, right? The timing was just a little bit off.
So Tess, how do you teach, you know, like the student? Because you're like the leader of them, right?
I work in the co-curricular space, so a lot of what my job is getting students to just be curious about the city and hopefully go explore it. So a lot of times we tend to work with like orientation and like first and second years. So it's a pretty low barrier to entry is the goal. Like, hey, we're doing this cool thing. You should come. So it is like,
walk the path. You do the bare minimum and you were hired because you're
low barrier to entry.
We'll put that on the bottom. Don't worry.
Education. Students.
Yeah.
Low barrier.
Yeah. So things that they, you know, can just show up, sign up the day before, and it's something fun happening on a Saturday, that sort of thing. So it could be an urban hike to do the Great Chicago Firewalk, or we took them to the new Wild Mile, if you guys have been there yet. It's really cool, like the ecological floating river thing. So it's just a way to be like, no matter what you're interested in, Chicago has something cool going on and you should go check it out.
And that's important. Because like Chicago get a bad rep for a lot of goofy stuff. You know,
exactly.
What I mean? Like and the fact that you can say, hey, look, no, let me show you what
right.
we have.
So much of like the value of this program is also like, for example, we had one student come here that we were doing a program in Lincoln Square.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, my parents told me that it's really dangerous over there.
Lincoln Square?
That's how Marty
Mers Apothecary.
Yes. And we were like,
we invited his parents to come to town and do like a brewery tour with us.
Are you serious?
Wow. It's just they have the wrong information. Like, of course, like once he was there, he was like, oh, like this area is
a pet store on every.
Exactly. So it's just about changing that narrative that sometimes students come in with just, you know, they're young and the way the news talks about Chicago can be so negative. And so this is a really fun way to be like, you might be scared to go out and explore, but like come with a group and maybe meet some friends and meet a professor along the way who has some sort of expertise in this region or in this topic. So.
Or meet somebody who's not a professor, but is somebody from the community who knows stuff that folks at this place aren't going to know. And that's a key piece of what Tess does, too.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because I was just going to say, I would probably, if I was, you know, it's hard for me, I'm from Chicago, so, but if I was an outside looking in, I'd probably want to, all right, you've been here, all right, so tell me, you know, I don't want to know what, like, maybe a professor might to tell me where to go, you know, where have you been, you know what I mean? Like, so I think that's pretty cool, like.
That's really cool.
And we always try to use trans along the way as well to be like, you can come here on your own on Saturday. But it is very funny taking students on the CTA for the first time. Like, truly, like, is this our stop?
Yeah.
And like, I will tell you when it's our stop and we will all get off together.
And we'll be fine.
Where do you see, like, you know, community engagement and the growth from the 77 coming from, going?
I think there's something instructive about the way we got community area number 77, which is Edgewater. So Edgewater had been considered just a part of Uptown in kind of the original 1920s formulation, but the people of Edgewater rose up and decided that they had a sufficiently different identity that they were able to actually persuade the powers that be that Edgewater was going to be its own community area. And I don't know a whole lot about that story, but I think that's kind of a cool thing, right? Because it's people who operating out of a, I suspect, completely different theory of the ways that human beings organize themselves in communities, were able to kind of express their identity and change the way in which they were considered. I don't know that we're going to change the 77 framework all that much. There's now 100 years of history and 100 years of statistical aggregation. And if you do GIS work, you don't want the 77 to change, because it just makes it complicated for what happens after, right? Like when they changed the names of the streets in 1909, it was a mess for a while there. But I think maybe moving the focus away from talking about these statistical aggregate units to thinking more about neighborhoods, to thinking more about communities, and to thinking ways about the ways that like lines of identity aren't necessarily as geographically bound in the city of Chicago. I think we've gotten ourselves into a lot of trouble by like looking at particular neighborhoods and grouping them a certain way and saying, making value judgments based on things that in some cases are very accidental, as opposed to asking people how they understand themselves, what they think their community is about, who they consider to be their neighbors, and what they think their neighborhood is. I think if we take a more of a listening stance and a little bit less of a descriptive or proscriptive stance, especially from some imaginary objective position of expertise, and there's a lot of air quotes on that for you podcast listeners. I just feel like the more we listen and the less we talk about communities, the better we're going to do as a city, and the more chances we have to actually build authentic community among ourselves.
We don't have that ends right there. That's it. Yeah, that's it. That, I can see the trail off right there. I like that. That's it right there. Like that's a man. That's standing old.
That was Loki Fire.
Yeah.
That was incredible. And you know when someone starts talking and you're just like in awe of everything they're saying, and you're like, I don't even need to contribute to this conversation because you got it.
Yeah. I mean, like honestly, the way they ended that interview was ending on a high note. We couldn't say nothing else after that. We just had to end it right there. But literally, it was, I think we talked about this a bunch, you know, since we had that interview. It was like a final chapter, like we closed the book on the 77. At least that's how I feel. You know what I mean? Like we went through the 77. Now we can make it more, like he said, about the neighborhoods,
right?
And the more history about Chicago. And I think, you know, we learned a lot over you know those 77 weeks. Right. We learned a shit ton, you know, and now we can apply that knowledge to kind of be more in depth, you know, and how we can help, you know, the city grow neighborhood-wise and people-wise.
Yep, and if you do have any topics you want to learn about or anything you think is important enough for us to dedicate an entire episode to, please go to our website, 77flavorsshy.com, and go to the Talk to Us tab and send us a little message. Let us know what you want us to what you want us to talk about. DM us on Instagram. Yep. Facebook, Twitter, whatever it is. We're constantly looking for, we've jotted down all the questions that we had while we were doing our first roundabout. And so we're always looking for more ideas of interesting things, because obviously there's so much happening in the city. So much history that, like, no matter how much you learn and how much you talk about, there's still more.
Yeah, there's so much more. Community. There's so much community in this in this city. So
if there's something in your neighborhood,
If you haven't, if you saw something like you want to talk to these group of people, do this, that, the other, you know, and this is worthwhile to the city.
Or a building that you saw that looks cool. Right. You know what I mean? There's no limit.
We gonna get to the bottom of it. So, but we got hungry and we were on college campus and we had some decent, very decent, campus food. We'll talk about it after the break.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
To the food portion of this episode. Today we had a couple different things. So it was really cold. We got off the bus. We were going to campus and
you downplayed that cold.
It was freezing. And we were dressed as if it was like 45 degrees outside, but in reality it was like 28, which is a stark difference.
Stark. Well, you know what it is?
Is stark applicable in here?
Yes.
Stark is like visual, isn't it?
No. Stark, well, it could be anything. Stark kind of means drastic. You know what I mean? Like, that's, at least I think so. That's how I use it.
I don't know that just because you use it a certain shit, way. That's
right. It's right in my head.
That's what she said. Anyway, it was very cold.
Yeah, very cold, yeah.
And we walked from the bus. So we took the green line for the first. This was our first time riding.
First time we're on the green.
And we took the green line from, was it Jackson? No.
Because we took it green line from Ashland.
Oh, yeah. We took the green line from Ashland, and it goes all the way down
Cottage Grove.
To Cottage Grove.
Or 63rd in Ashland.
Yeah, and we got off Cottage Grove.
Garfield.
Oh, sorry. Stop saying things.
I'm sorry.
Shit.
Hey, you just following a brother.
Yeah, for real. I'm trusting you and shit. Okay, we got off at Garfield, and then, because we are not University of Chicago students, we couldn't take the
UGO,
which is their campus bus system thing. We took the regular bus, and we had a ghost bus encounter.
Oh my goodness.
And I was so mad. Here's the thing. This is not our first ghost bus.
It's not.
The bus that runs down Diversey is
habitual ghost bus.
Literally. Every other bus doesn't show up.
If you're trying to catch the 76 from the Diversey station, yeah, you're done.
Just walk. Just walk wherever you're going because it's not showing up.
Yeah.
But this one was like our first midday ghost bus. I don't know. It was just different other than the 76.
It was our first ghost bus on the south side.
It was cold. And we came up with this thing. We can't use it though because it's trademarked.
We can.
It's trademarked by a company in Colorado. Man,
let them come here.
It's called Go Busters.
Ghostbusters.
We both said it wrong twice.
Yeah, sure did.
I guess we didn't come up with it.
Glad it's not trademarked for us. That's why we don't got it.
But anyway, so yeah, we got on the bus. It took us right to campus. We walked just a few blocks down to get to the like quad area and the building where we recorded. And before we got to the building, we had to stop into the bookstore.
Yeah.
And get something.
Yeah.
To defrost. So
literally, that was what it was.
Literally. You had a chicken sandwich.
Yeah.
Which was drier than the Sahara.
Dry, boy. It was like, imagine a grown man just choking you down the throat. Pause. Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Slow down.
Nothing wrong.
Okay. All right. y'all know what I mean.
Yeah.
It was like.
Well, I don't know what your preferences are.
No. What is going on here? Anyway, the chicken was dry is what we said.
The chicken was dry.
But it's campus food.
You said the best thing about it was the brioche bun.
Hey, that brioche bun was slapping. I feel like brioche buns don't matter if they...
Well, sometimes they could... I guess, yeah.
You still get the sweetness of it. Mm-hmm. You still get the sweetness of it. And as long as they're not hard...
That's what you said.
Then it's good.
Yeah. Nobody likes a hard brioche bun. It's like eating a pretzel, but I'm so glad we're off the pretzel bun train because God.
Yeah, we wrote that too hard.
Too hard.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
All right. That's
enough. All right.
I just had a coffee and a muffin. Yeah. It was average. What's weird about the plate, the coffee was so bad.
It's campus.
But the thing is, it serves Starbucks things, cafe, like fully. Like they make
it look
Starbucks
like a mini
drinks,
Starbucks, yeah.
But they have big signs that say, we are not a Starbucks. But they literally have, like, their menu is a Starbucks menu. Yeah. Anyway, it was very weird.
Yeah.
But after that, we got some footage. We got some drone shots. And if you want to watch all of that, go to our YouTube channel and watch the full video. You can actually watch the interview. You can watch literally everything.
Yeah, right. Behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes, all of that. But...
Because this was a good behind the scenes.
It was.
It's still good.
it wasn't that good. No.
So much shit.
I know. But then we went to our actual restaurant.
Yeah.
Which is Saucy Porca. Okay. Saucy Porca right there, right off campus. Not off campus. It's like basically still on campus. But it's an independent restaurant. It has nothing to do with the school, is what I meant by off campus.
Yeah.
But it is a Vietnamese Latin fusion restaurant.
Amazing.
Amazing. So the founder was actually one of the first. She started off with a food truck. She was one of the first people in Chicago that owned a food truck. I believe she's from St. Louis, though. Boo. But
I did the Buddha chef.
No, I booed Buddha St. Louis.
St. Louis, yeah. A homeland.
Boo.
Go Cubs, no, go.
Yeah. I've never been to St. Louis. I don't even know.
Yeah. It ain't nothing there.
Isn't it in Missouri?
Nelly.
What?
Nelly.
Oh. Well, that's not reason for me to even like it more.
I mean,
like
it's Nelly, not. That's what I'm saying.
But anyway, so the chef started off with her. I believe her and her husband started off a food truck. And they were some of the first people to actually start food trucks in Chicago. They kind of paved the road for the food trucks to come. Mm. And then they opened a couple of restaurants in the financial district, and then they opened Saucy Porca at the University of Chicago campus. And
y'all gonna be proud of your boy. We gonna get there. Y'all gonna be proud of me.
Yeah,
you're gonna be proud of me.
Way outside your comfort zone.
Yeah. It was, but I've been asking for this kind of food because I'm like, I want listeners to know that you can listen to our podcast and we give you all the options.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we cater to everybody who is trying to eat somewhere, right? And I feel like we might have missed, you know, some opportunities with some different spots, but we're conscious of it.
Yeah.
So that's why I was like really excited, and I want to make it a thing. You know what I mean? Like, that we do it.
Yeah, so this is their Hyde Park location, and the place itself, when you go in, it has like a beachy vibe. And they have like great music playing.
They really do.
The place they had there was going crazy.
It was a vibe.
It was a vibe.
Yeah. What?
But let's talk about what we ordered.
Oh yeah.
So you don't order. No one comes to your table, and you don't order up. You can order up at the counter, but basically, you sit down, you scan a QR code, a thing comes up, you order, and then they bring the food to you.
Yeah, fast too. Like, let's get that straight.
Super fast.
Like, you order it, and you maybe wait like 5 minutes.
Yeah,
maybe, you know.
Well, a little bit longer because some of the stuff actually has to cook, but a lot of it is pre-prepared,
okay,
like spring rolls and
you
know what I mean. But like the things that are made to order are like fries and stuff, and the tacos and stuff like that. But like spring rolls, you have to make them ahead of time. You can't just roll a fucking spring roll right there. You probably fry it right there, but you know, it's literally the
work
fry
to do.
Time.
Yeah.
So we tried to eat.
I mean, because we did. So
yeah, we tried to eat as much. You weren't supposed to saw it.
She gonna try to clap back at me. Hold on. anyway.
So we tried to eat as many things off the menu that would fit multiple different dietary restrictions. They are very good about that. They have vegan, they have vegetarian, they have shellfish-free, and they have gluten-free options.
Yeah, they do it all. They cater to everybody.
They try to really be... I don't know if there's any like cross-contamination, so if it's a... I don't know about the actual... Like, if you're really allergic... how little cross-contamination there is, but they do have it on their site that they do cater to all of those dietary restrictions, so I'm assuming that they are very careful with the cross-contamination. But
right.
Here is what we ordered.
Yeah.
So we got the Funky Monkey Fries.
Yes!
They have the seasoned crinkle cut fries with house-made spice mix, which is the monkey spice, and they're topped with picadillo ground beef, chihuahua cheese, jalapeno aioli, scallions, and you can get them in small or large. We got the small.
And, wow, that was a small?
That was a small.
Wow. Okay, y'all. First of all, these fries, all that sauce and stuff on there, fire. Fire. Like, and so the way we ate it was like, it wasn't the first thing we had. So by the time we got to that, we were kind of full eating the other stuff, right?
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, we got to try these fries.
Mm-hmm.
Great fries.
They were really good.
That's a meal by itself. Like, if you like,
I agree.
If you're a college student, you want something real quick, I'd assume, like you want to sit down real bite. That's a perfect college type of food.
Yeah.
You get your drink, you get some fries, boom, boom, boom. Just smack that real quick. You back on campus.
And I love the flavor, the fusion of flavors. You know what I mean? I think Latin food has so many great like spices and spice mixes, and I think Vietnamese food has incredible flavors, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so combining both in this way is really, really special. I don't know if I wouldn't say I don't know if anyone else has done it. I wouldn't say that they're like original, but I'm sure a lot of people have explored this kind of food, but right. they do it pretty well.
Very well. I mean, like, I think the spices and the flavors, they steal the show here, right? And we'll explain why later, why you're proud of me. But the spices and flavors, all that together, I mean, yeah. it was just, it's hard to describe certain tastes. You know what I mean? Because you're like, wow, I taste the Vietnamese and I taste the Latin side. And you're just like, okay, all this together is great. I just don't know how to describe it. Which kind of brings us to the point of, what was the thing that I said? It was like kind of, it tasted funky, but it was like, I think it was a spring roll.
It was the spring roll. So it was the vegetarian spring roll. Yes. And we'll get to that in a second. But before getting to that, I want to talk about the tostones, which are fried green plantains topped with pineapples, salsa, scallions, and with a curry aioli.
Okay.
And they're fully vegetarian. So the curry aioli, oh my God, why can't I pronounce that combo of words, was so good.
Yeah.
It was like a little sweet. It was really, really special.
Had corn on it. Yeah. It had the corn.
No, it had pineapple.
Pineapple, that's right. And that sweetness was all you needed. You know, it was, to me, I don't like all the additives on there. I just want to get to the real thing. But you got to take a bite with the pineapple because I think
it's a great addition.
It mixes the flavors of the pineapple mixed with the plantain.
Yeah, because the green plantain is not as sweet as a ripe plantain.
Right.
So you're not getting like an overwhelming plantain level of sweetness.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's perfect. And then you get a little bit of tartness, like a little sour from the pineapple.
Yeah.
I think it's like the perfect combo of flavors.
It was great.
And with the curry, it's really great.
It was great. I mean, like all of that was great.
Yeah, I loved it. And then we had the egg rolls. So we got three different kinds of egg rolls. Each egg roll is $2.85. It's cut in half. So really you're getting like one pretty large egg roll for $2.85. Mm-hmm. And there we got the chorizo.
Okay, great.
Which is it's chorizo, sweet potatoes, chihuahua cheese, red cabbage, and onions served with a jalapeno aioli. And what did you think of that one?
I think
I can't remember which one was which.
No, I definitely remember. Okay. I mean, I remember all the foods. They were that distinct. You know what I mean? Like they were all that distinct. But I liked all those egg rolls. And the reason, so to me, the chorizo one was like probably the most normal one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Normal is not the word. I'm not using it in a bad way, but it's just like, that was like basic, right? The vegetarian one.
Yeah.
And then the ground beef one. Those two distinctly had different tastes.
The ground beef one is really interesting. So it's ground beef, potatoes, raisins, poblano peppers, red cheese, I mean, chihuahua cheese, and red cabbage. And then it comes with the chipotle aioli. I think you're right about the chorizo one. Even the jalapeno aioli was the least flavorful of the aiolis that we had.
Yeah.
I think the chipotle aioli and then the curry were my two favorite.
Right.
But yeah, I loved the ground beef one.
Yeah, and usually you don't rock with ground beef because it's so basic. It's common. But like this was different.
It was good.
It was very good. And the vegetarian one, way out of my realm. But I would eat that and just be like, okay, cool. And granted, There's vegetarian spring rolls everywhere. You go to any Chinese restaurant, that's what you're going to get unless you say, I want chicken. You know, the chicken, you know what I mean? But like, but this flavor though.
You know what the ground beef one kind of reminded me of? And it, not exactly, but kind of, is the sweet beef empanadas.
That's good. Right.
Because like the raisins give it that little bit of sweetness.
Yeah.
That's kind of what.
That's the only time I want okay with raisins in it. I'm like,
nothing wrong with raisins. Just don't put them in potato salad.
I didn't know it was raisins until just now.
Yeah. I honestly didn't look at what's in the things. Damn. So.
Yeah, that's crazy.
We just ordered. The vegetarian egg roll is cabbage, carrots, onions, mushrooms, and garlic, chili garlic, and house-made seasoning served with mojo sauce.
Mm.
You know that, is it?
I don't know what the hell mojo.
Mojo?
Mojo. Let's move on. what else did we have? We had these bacos.
Oh,
They call these things bacos.
Yes.
They're like tacos.
They're tacos. With a B. Well, you know why they're with a B.
Absolutely not.
No?
I remember.
We talked about it.
We did, but I'm old. Well,
okay.
My memory going.
Well, the bacos are I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, but all I think of is like Wow Bao. So I want to call them Baos, but they're like the what you would normally, not normally, but what you would experience as like a dumpling. Mm-hmm. But they've turned they've turned that dough into a taco, a tortilla, yeah, basically, to replace the tortilla. And then they filled it with other things.
Y'all, this is a revelation to me.
You didn't know that?
I was sitting. So that makes sense now. Okay, so it's a dumpling, the outside of a dumpling, but basically made as a taco. So
instead of the dumpling having the filling in it, it's made to look like a tortilla.
Tortilla.
And then the filling is on top of it. Y'all, and then you eat it like a taco.
Very interesting. So the taco itself is the flavors, again, steal the show, but the protein in it, that was, you know, nothing to write home about except for the shrimp one. The shrimp one was...
Well, I ordered the shrimp the way that you like specifically.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that one was... That slap. The story here, though, is that the tortilla.
Yeah.
Because it's so weird. It's, yeah, like you pick it up and it feels like clay or dough or something like that.
It's a fluffy dumpling normally. Yeah. So, like, you know those, like, baos, right?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah.
And now so, I know. I get it.
Yeah. So but, it's a pretty fluffy texture. It feels so nice with the filling.
Yeah, but it's weird because when you bite it, you don't even taste it. It melts so quickly.
Right, it's meant to accompany the filling, so
it don't do shit though. But like, which is cool. Like, you look at it, and you feel it, like, I don't want to put this in my mouth. Wow. And then you do it.
Feels
you,
testicular.
No. Look at this. They don't rope me into this.
But no, they were really, really good. I love them. I think we ordered three of them, and mm-hmm. they're about $3 and some are $4.50, but some are $3.85.
Pension these college students, boy.
Well, I think three are very filling. So, like, if you order three tacos, you're going to be good.
That's $9, though. That's $10. They ain't that big. Now, this is my thing.
They're not, but they're filling.
I think the
replacement of the, if it was just a regular flour or corn tortilla, I would say, yeah, maybe it's a bit much on the price, but because maybe they are a little expensive.
Because they're pretty small. Like,
they are small.
I don't want to send the people off.
Yeah.
They are small. Just know that they are good, very good. You know what I mean? Like, $3.50? That's a lot.
But it's we had the pork, which comes, the guajillo pork, topped with pineapple salsa and served on a steamed bao bun. And then we had the chicken, mm-hmm. which is a curry chicken with pickled Asian slaw and served on about steamed bao bun. And then we had the shrimp, which we ordered the shrimp, like the tempura.
Yep.
And it comes with corn salsa and a chipotle aioli.
Fire.
And it was the shrimp one was your favorite?
Yeah, the shrimp by far.
Really?
Favorite. Yeah, by far. It was like that one stood out the most.
I like the pork one a lot.
That was good. I mean, like that, not you know, bad, but that shrimp one stood out
because you like the tempura.
I do, but it also felt different. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like the pork was also soft when you mix it with the
I see. So the textures
were too similar.
I agree. There were a couple things that we ate that I wish there was like a crunch somewhere.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and we'll talk about it let's talk about it right now. We actually got the Puerto Rican rice bowl, which is rice.
Yeah, that's what I was going.
We got rice with sauteed with edamame beans, carrots, bean sprouts, scallions, and your choice of protein. We got the, which one did we get? We got
the tofu.
We got the ginger soy tofu with it. So here's the thing. The rice, great. The tofu, actually really good.
Yes. Yeah.
So it was cut into little triangles. I know. It was cut into little thin triangles and almost like pan fried.
Yeah.
So it had a little bit of a crunch. It wasn't crunchy, but it had some texture on the outside. And that's my thing. I don't think there was enough edamame and carrots and scallions on the plate to make up for, because you got a decent amount of rice. You know what I mean?
A lot of rice.
So you get more rice than you get toppings. And I feel like, personally, for me, I like texture when I'm eating things. I like varying textures. I don't like to eat all soft or all crunchy. You know what I mean?
You're looking hard, don't you?
All right, first of all. I like varying textures when I'm eating. And I think this bowl kind of lacked that a little bit. I would have liked maybe like some, like the pickled slaw, right? Like the pickled carrots or something on there to kind of add a little bit of texture and maybe a sauce.
So that's the only thing I say. All the other stuff, that didn't matter to me personally. But sauce, I think, would have set this.
Set it off.
This would have. So let me tell you first, because if you listen to the podcast from the jump, I trash vegan food.
Yeah.
For quite a while. You know what I mean? Then we had vegan food, and I liked it. I just didn't like the tofu. I was like, tofu, I can't get it. And now I can say that I can eat tofu if it's prepared in a good way. You know what I mean? And this one was, it tasted different. You know what I mean? But like, you knew you were eating something different, but it didn't have that tofu thought process.
Yeah.
It didn't look like, you know, tofu. Mm-hmm. It didn't look jello-y or jiggly and shit like that. Mm. It had a nice color to it.
Yeah.
The flavor made me change my mind. I'm not saying I'm a tofu eater, but I will eat tofu if it's prepared in a tasteful way. There you go, vegans. There you go. I'm not team vegan, but I get y'all. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I get y'all. I understand. Yeah. I understand now.
Yeah.
Like, I can definitely eat that. And now I was shocked because I was like, I'm gonna do it for the podcast. I'm not gonna be no punk. But then I fucked around and liked it.
Yeah.
That shit was good. It was very good, y'all. And it was consumable bites. Yeah. You know what I mean? It wasn't
It wasn't like a large
big ass piece of tofu. You know what I mean? It was very good.
That was probably my least favorite item.
Yeah, that was your least. I did definitely.
Not because of the tofu.
I know.
But because of the overall
goal. Yeah,
but the last thing we had was the ropa vieja banh mi.
Yeah, that was good.
And if you don't know what a banh mi is, it's a traditional Vietnamese sandwich. It comes on a French roll, and it's usually stuffed with things, varying things. But here, because it's a play on Latin food or a fusion of Latin food, it's ropa vieja. And if you don't know what ropa vieja is, it's braised beef brisket.
Yeah, it was good.
It's topped with mayo, kimchi, and served on a French baguette.
It was good. It was good. I mean, I got not much more to say about that. It was good. It was good. That's the thing. It was good.
It's a decent size.
Yes. Very.
Might be a bit pricey because it's $13 for just the sandwich.
It was $13.
Yeah.
God damn.
So I would say it's a bit pricey, but it is braised brisket. So
I don't care what you braise for that size.
Yeah,
it's not huge. Braise it.
I would say if it was like $13 and it came with a side of like plain fries and a drink, maybe.
But I mean, the food, it was good. Don't get me wrong. It was good. I think it's the portion is that I. But
we were very full. We didn't even finish everything.
Right now, I know we didn't. But like, I guess the price is, you know, we need to stop balling like we out of control here. Because I am not looking at the tag when we eat.
I ordered, so.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, right. I didn't. Okay. Well, that's. I guess if I had to say something, you know what I mean? Like, the price is a little high, you know what I mean? But
it really depends on what you order. Because, like, the fries were $6.50, which I think is very reasonable.
Yeah.
The food
is very good, though. Yeah. So, the food is very good. So, their price is boy. That, you know what I mean? Like, that. Why am I learning about this now after we done ate the shit?
I don't know.
Anyway, that's it. I'm done talking.
So check them out. They're in Hyde Park. They're in South Loop. They're in St. Louis. If you're also in St. Louis. We enjoyed it overall.
It was
pretty good. It was a different fusion of foods that we haven't had before. And I think they went very well together.
I 100% would recommend this. I definitely.
Try it out.
You know, just be cautious of the price. Bring your checkbook, you know. And don't. And, you know, you can easily overeat here. That's the thing.
Sure.
Like, because like you're going to get full of certain things, you know what I mean? Like, so just be mindful of that.
I would say you can, each person can, because they also have things like pho, they have
soup, you're right, yeah.
They have gumbo, like.
Yeah, apparently with that gumbo was slapping.
So they have other things on the menu that we did not order, because it would have been just way too much food. But, I mean, we didn't finish everything we ate, so. Nah,
that's what I'm saying, we were full, so go there, be smart about it.
Yeah, I think a person can eat and be full with $15.
Yeah,
if you order correctly.
Yeah, you can get, what, four of them tacos.
I think that's way more than enough.
That is. It is. Okay. I'm done.
All right, cool. Well, if you enjoyed this episode, send it to someone you like. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you. And if you did not like this episode,
that's it. That's too bad for you then.
Dario's quitting the show.
We'll see you next Monday.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, thank you so much for listening. We really hope you enjoyed that. Please follow us on all social media at 77 Flavors Shy. And if you have any ideas and things you want to learn about, please email us at media@77flavorsshy.com.
Yeah, and if you could also head on over to our YouTube channel, same thing, 77 Flavors Shy, and give us a follow, give us a like, and give us a good rating there. Make some comments. Only go ahead and subscribe. Like, we love y'all. See you next week.